Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is here. Chris Kaufman will join us in the second half of the show, or he will join me in the second half of the show, but I have Simon here. And of course, we are brought to you by Manscaped. Use promo code 5RSN, get 20% off your entire order plus free shipping. And of course, Prize Picks. Use promo code 5FIVE. You deposit $100, they give you $100, and it's a one-time rollover, which means you bet it through once, they give it to you. So it's a free $100. Take it. And of course, Better Edge. Go to betteredge.com/5reasons and you get a $25 sign-up bonus. All right, Simon. We're going to start in a negative spot here, okay? I'm going to ask you to make an evaluation with what you've seen of a certain player, and then we're going to go on to other certain players right after that. But the Dolphins take a 30-0 lead. First of all, do you think it was premature to start benching your quarterback two series in to the third quarter, and that they determined it at halftime?
Oh, it's such an interesting question because, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, you just said, yeah, absolutely, because you saw him get sacked and you saw him get hit and you saw the hit to the head and all of those sorts of things. But you're up 30-0. They've got one first down, maybe two first downs. I was semi-surprised that at 30-15, with about 12 minutes left, they didn't bring him back out. I don't think that was Mike McDaniel's best moment that game. I thought it was a really weird game plan. I thought just having the quarterback drop back all the time and throw seemed really weird. I know that Raheem Mostert wasn't playing. I love Mike McDaniel, absolutely love Mike McDaniel. But I just don't think that was his best day. I think he just got so caught up. I don't think we were in rhythm, particularly offensively. I don't think Tua was amazing. You know, he had some drops, he had some misses. But when Teron Armstead goes out the game and you're up against Jerry Hughes and, you know, your quarterback's getting hit, he's getting flipped over backwards, he's getting bent upside down, he's getting shots to the head. You know, this team wasn't going to win. I just, I sort of found it a little bit odd that he stayed in the game, that, you know, that he didn't come back into the game then at that point. I don't have an issue up 30-0 that Skylar Thompson comes in. My issue was that then they took their foot off the pedal massively. And I think that was a bit of an issue. Because all of a sudden you're letting a team that could clearly move the ball and they were using the tight end really well. So in a long-winded way, I just overall thought it was a really weird game plan from Mike McDaniel. And, you know, if at that point when Skylar went deep and was incomplete on that drive and we punted to them with like 8.5 minutes left up by 16, if they'd have scored at that point, yeah, two of them sat on the sideline for like 1 hour and 10 minutes. And then all of a sudden you're bringing him back into the game. I just thought it was just a weird, you know, and just having Skylar just continue just to drop back and throw the ball felt really weird as well. Look, a win is a win. It's great. We're 8-3. That's amazing. And I know people are always like, oh, you're so negative. You're so negative. And, you know, I look for the bigger picture in terms of, you know, what the next game is going to bring, what the playoff is going to bring. I didn't think it was a very well-managed performance by the head coach. Not to say I don't love the head coach, because I do. I just thought that, you know, that's the sort of thing that could cost us just some of those in-game decisions that happen that weren't amazing. I didn't think, you know, some of the play calls were brilliant. I just didn't think it was his best day.
Yeah, and I'll go further. I don't like that you're talking at halftime. I understand it's 30 to nothing. It's not 80 to nothing, okay? It's 30 to nothing. And I don't like that the head coach and the quarterback coach and the quarterback are already laying out at halftime when the quarterback is coming out of the game. The rest of the team sees that, feels that, hears that, and it's just human nature to let down. It's borderline disrespectful. In my opinion, it's borderline disrespectful, okay? And all you did was hurt yourself. You hurt your team, and you're hurting your defense. You're putting your defense out there over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't like that. You know, keep it on the down low. Maybe you hint at Tua, hey, you know, if this goes our way to start the second half, you're playing two series, buddy, and that's it, and you're out. But don't start, you know, essentially turn your entire halftime period into, okay, when are we basically going to take their foot off the pedal, you know?
That didn't feel like a game yesterday in which we needed to drop back and throw 41 times. Do you know what I mean? That just, you know, that wasn't a 41 time throw the ball down the field sort of game. That was the weird thing for me, I think.
Yeah. And now let's get into the evaluation. It begs to reason, okay, that if you're benching your starting quarterback up 30 to nothing and playing another guy, and he's going to have to throw it maybe 6 or 7 or 8 or maybe even possibly 10 times to win the game, because you do got to salt that game away. You can't just be going 3 and out and punting all game. It stands to reason that they probably needed Teddy Bridgewater, but they didn't have Teddy Bridgewater because he has an injury. But we've now seen Skylar Thompson 3 times. You got to toss that Jet game. I'm sorry. The guy had nothing. I was told they even used like 12 plays in that game. You know, he was just thrust into action. And then all of a sudden, like, hey, buddy, go win us a game here against the Jets. You know, toss that one up. But we saw him play very well against the Vikings. Then he got injured, which is something that's happened with him, by the way, before in college. But we saw him today. We saw him on Sunday against the Texans. That was uninspiring. Is it possible they made a mistake here in their evaluation? Or because he just missed wide open throws. They drew up some simple stuff for him to keep those chains moving in the fourth quarter, and he just couldn't execute. What were your thoughts on Skylar Thompson? Look, does it concern you going forward with their strategy of having a cheap, quote unquote, cheap backup quarterback for next season?
Look, I don't think it's going to be an issue because he's going to have an extra year of development. He wasn't helped by a couple of drops. You know, I don't think he played amazingly, but look, I don't think he was running for his life a couple of times, which doesn't help. You know, Armstead's out of the game. We really weren't trying to establish the running game at all and hadn't made any sort of commitment to the running game. So, I mean, that doesn't really bother me, to be honest, Alf. This is like we're looking, you know, what, 10 months away. I don't really have an issue with that. I don't think anybody's decided yet whether or not Teddy will be on the roster or not, whether Skylar is the backup moving forwards. I like what he does. I like how he sets up. I like his throwing motion. I think he can be accurate. I think he throws with, you know, he's got a significant arm strength. You know, so I don't really have a massive issue with what happened. I'm not looking ahead to, you know, next September and wondering whether or not, you know, if Skylar has to come into the game, he's able to carry us. Look, when the rubber met the road, we were a Jason Sanders field goal away from taking a 20-19 lead on the road in his very first, you know, start, apart from one snap when Teddy had to go out of the game. I know we ended up losing that game, but at 20-19 lead, 9 minutes left on the road, that game isn't ending up 40-20 as it did. I think if he stays in the game against the Vikings, we beat the Vikings. I think it's as simple as that. I thought he started really well, so I don't really have any concerns moving forwards about Skylar. I think he's shown more than enough already to know that you feel confident in him if he has to come into the game. Very difficult to be placed into a situation where you're leading 30-0. There's no atmosphere in the stadium. You know, the players have checked out a little bit, both mentally and physically, I think, a little bit. I don't really have an issue with that. And like, how can you blame players for checking out at 30-0 in a game where you could get hurt seriously on any given snap? So, I think the scenario was very different.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Now, this issue, I think, is more pressing. They got good news on Terron Armstead. Okay, they escaped the worst. Okay, you're looking at something that might keep them out 2 weeks, maybe one, but it's minor. It's a strain. It's not what was what was feared, because if you think about it, if he just has a low grade tear, it's 4 to 6 weeks. If it's a high grade tear, he's out 6 months. Okay, so they got lucky on that one, but Austin Jackson, I don't think, was very good in this game. And then they decide, okay, Terron Armstead is out. We're putting Brandon Schell in at left tackle. He looked worse. And it got so bad that toward the end of the game, when Austin Jackson got kicked in the ankle, they move Brandon Schell back to right tackle. And now Greg Little's playing left tackle. What are they do? Obviously, Terron Armstead, I don't think, is playing on Sunday. What do they do there? Because none of the options that they had out there this Sunday looked any good.
I don't think it was Greg Little, was it? I thought it was Lionel Coleman that they brought in at the end.
No, it was Greg Little. Greg Little came in at the end of the game. Yeah.
Look, I think there are four unicorns on the roster that you absolutely can't afford to lose in terms of whether or not you feel like this is a Super Bowl team. Number one is Tua. Number two is Terron Armstead. Number three is Xavier Howard. Number four is Tyreek Hill. And I think you swap three and four, actually. But nevertheless, the news yesterday that I certainly heard that, and I know Chris did as well, that we were both told by separate people that they felt like it was much more significant than it turned out to be. My issue is that, you know, and you can't do anything about it. My issue is that you are now facing Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack. And then, you know, potentially Von Miller, but that excellent pass rush from all directions that, you know, whether that's Boogie Basham or Greg Rousseau or Matt Milano lining up on the edge or the blitz packages, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You are just losing a top five left tackle in the league. You are losing somebody who understands, organizes before the snap. You are losing a guy that's playing next to Robert Jones and is helping him where he's not become an issue and a clusterfuck week in, week out, which he hasn't been, to his eternal credit. But the bigger issue for me is what the knock-on effect that it has on the offense. You know, I watched the end of that 49ers game yesterday, and Nick Bosa wins the game for the 49ers at the end, where he comes off the edge and sacks Andy Dalton on fourth down. You know, that's not happening against Terron Armstead. Okay, it's not. But it is happening against Austin Jackson or Brandon Schell or Greg Little. And what it means is that you either have to keep a back in, whether that's Jeff Wilson, or you have to keep a tight end in. And what the Dolphins love to do is go five-man protection and then five people out on routes. Because what it does, it opens up the center of the field, and they use a tight end to open up the center of the field, or they use the back in motion and out and down the sideline, which then creates confusion, whether you're in zone or in man, but especially in zone, because it just freezes the safety for a second, which leaves the middle of the field open. You can't do that nearly as easily when you're running four-man routes as you could with five-man routes. Yes, you can do it with three-man routes. Yes, you can do it with two-man routes, but it's easier. And the Dolphins, and I'll have to look at the numbers, but on five-man routes, the Dolphins, I would imagine, pick up significant chunks of yardage by being able to do that, whether that's Gesicki going deep and then allowing...
Their best personnel group is easily 11 personnel. That's absolutely a fact.
Absolutely. So the knock-on effect of Armstead not playing is huge. Now, you know, you talk about tackles around the league, and we've discussed it ad infinitum on this podcast in terms of, look, you know, the league, there is a dearth of talent to play tackle. There's a dearth of talent at the college level to play tackle. And, you know, you're coming from, often in college, you're coming from wide open splits, four or five receivers on every down. But fundamentals are not there. That's why, you know, if your number one guy goes down, it can become a clusterfuck. And very few teams, you know, I look at the Chargers, who've done an amazing job because Rashawn Slater's an all-pro left tackle. He went out, and Jamari Salia, who they took in the draft, who was a guard who kicked out to left tackle as a senior at Georgia, has had an absolutely unbelievable season at left tackle, replacing Rashawn Slater. I don't think he's given up a sack. He's been absolutely fundamentally sound as anything. You look at the Green Bay Packers last year, we talked about it. Bakhtiari went down. Elton Jenkins kicked out to left tackle, who tore his Achilles. Josh Nyman came in and played left tackle. They didn't really miss a beat. I mean, you know, they did a little bit, but very few teams are able to do that. The Dolphins aren't able to do that, you know. So to me, it's a massive concern when you're facing three huge road games, you know, when you're second seed in the AFC at the moment, but you face a really difficult game against the 49ers anyway, which is going to be difficult, quite apart from the fact they're a really good team. I don't think they've conceded a point in this. Is that right? They haven't conceded a point in the second half in the last...
Since week eight.
Since week eight, right, okay. So the last 5 weeks, they haven't conceded a second half point at all. Yes. At all three levels, you know, whether that's pass rush, whether that's internally with Arik Armstead, the linebacker is the best linebacking core in the NFL, unquestionably the best linebacking core in the NFL. When you look at the guys, they're led by Fred Warner. And then I don't love the secondary, and I think you can attack the secondary, but with Talanoa Hufanga, who's just such a playmaker, Jimmy Ward, who's one of the most underrated players in the NFL, I think, you know, that's significant. Those are significant issues because it allows the 49ers, it takes away one of the things that the Dolphins do really well, and it sort of pluses the 49ers defense, who already doesn't need any extra pluses because they're really, really good with Dre Greenlaw and, you know, those guys. It's, yeah, I mean, it's just a concern when you're facing three big road trips, you know, against three good teams where you could go, you know, potentially 11-3 or at worst, you know, 11-3 or at worst 10-4. But you think, actually, you know, if one of our unicorns is down and it's going to have a knock-on effect to the point that I've just described to the offense, you don't want to come back home being 8-5 and suddenly scrapping for your lives. Because yesterday, by the way, you know, the Bengals won a game that, you know, keeps them thoroughly in the wildcard mix. Oh, and they hold they hold the trump over us because they beat us, you know, apart from the Ravens, all the results that we wanted to go against for us yesterday went against us in many ways. And it was actually pretty thankful that the Vikings managed to hold on against the Patriots on Thursday night, because, you know, the Patriots winning as well would have been an absolute nightmare. But, you know, you do have a concern about how long Armstead will be out, and just given the pass rush that is coming towards him. And then, oh, boom, it's Christmas Day and you've got Preston Smith coming at you. And, you know, oh, and then, yeah, the penultimate week of the season, you've got probably the defensive player of the year in Matthew Judon coming at you. Oh, and then, you know, you've got the Jets and they're pretty strong up front with Carl Lawson. And, you know, when they rotate Quinn and Williams outside and all those sorts of things. So it's just a massive stretch run for the guy. And you just hope that, you know, you hope that somehow it's just, you know, he's able to get the medical attention that he needs this week, and somehow he can play and he can play through it and it's okay. And he maybe plays with a brace or whatever, but you're missing, if you miss significant time, you're just putting so much extra pressure on that offense.
Yeah. The good news is that, you know, everything that they've said so far since the injury has been pretty positive and is leaning toward probably out this week and trying to make that game against the Chargers. And that's the goal. The goal, you know, I don't think this team is about, you know, hey, let's go squeak one out in California. This team is capable of winning both, and I think that should be the goal, is to go win both. And I think this first game, we're going to talk about that game on Thursday, but it's obvious they're going to have to go to more 21 personnel in the absence of Teron Armstead, because they're going to have to use Engel, they're going to have to use their tight ends to try to help Tua with protection. Now, on the good part, because we're going to talk some good, especially when you're up 30-0, okay, and the game is essentially over at halftime, and hearing some of those players talk, especially Brandon Cooks, when they asked him, when did you think it was going south, and he says, when we walked onto the field. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, this defense, as designed, I understand it's the Texans, okay, but this is the same Texan team that scared the Eagles for three quarters, okay, and then made a run at them in the fourth. Okay, so they're capable of doing some stuff. Okay, let's just say that you know, they're not completely hopeless. Damian Pierce is a really nice player. Brandon Cooks, we already talked about, he's a great player. Nico Collins is a really nice player. They have a few pieces. They're not completely incompetent. Okay,
yeah. Damian Pierce is really nice. The tight end kept killing us yesterday. You know, and you think, God, you got George Kittle coming to town, and you know, that's a, you know, we got killed with the tight end running free yesterday. So there's a lot to kind of look at and think, you know, I mean, it's great. Look, again, we're not trying to, this is a serious Super Bowl contender, but we're also not going to sit here on our hands and go, yeah, everything's amazing. We know things are pretty fucking good at the moment. And so we're just trying to, you know, we're just trying to, as fans and as, you know, whatever we are, we're just trying to kind of look at pathways where shit, you know, we need to do X, Y, and Z to, we've done an amazing job, a brilliant season, everything's going well. But, you know, when Jordan Akins is running wild on you, you think, okay, we might face a Travis Kelce in the first round of the playoffs, second round of the playoffs. We might face, we've got George Kittle next week. We've got, do you know what I mean? Those are the things that you're just thinking, right. And I think what we try and do on this podcast and what we try and do on our Discord channel on OnlyFins is essentially trying to look at it from a coaching perspective. How are the Dolphin coaches trying to assess what is happening? How are the opposition coaches trying to assess what is happening? So when we look at things, and people might think, oh, you're being so negative, we won, we're not, we're 8-3. That's yeah. It's not really the case. All we're trying to do is say, you know, in those meeting rooms today, the Dolphins coaches will be saying, Jordan Akins should not have been doing what he did to us. You know, in yes. Dolphins coaching meetings today, they'll be saying, okay, Teron's going to be out. How are we going to do this? How are we going to change our formations to, you know, what are we going to be able to do with the receivers that, you know, we could do with five-man formations that we, you know, five-man routes we can't do, you know, all of those things. So that's, you know, we're not just going to sit here as fans and go, yeah, it's amazing, it's brilliant, because I'm sure you can get that anywhere else. What we're trying to do is just give a sort of a slightly divergent, you know, analysis from how coaching staffs, both home and away, as it were, will be looking at, you know, each week as how this Dolphins team is playing.
Yeah, and again, on the defensive side of the ball, like, this is going to be a test. This is a really, really talented offense. They took some injuries. It's looking like Elijah Mitchell will not play. And if he does play, like, okay, Elijah, you know, you're a stronger man than most, because you don't get an MCL sprain and then decide, you know what, I'm going to go run the ball on Sunday. So Christian McCaffrey also left the game. And we're going to talk about this game on Thursday plenty, okay? And we'll have a much clearer injury picture. But this defense, as designed and as
big game for the Dolphins.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a miracle that it wasn't flexed to Sunday night, and it should have, because who the hell wants to see the Colts and the Cowboys?
Yeah, this is a Super Bowl, potential Super Bowl matchup. And I don't say that lightly, but this is a potential Super Bowl matchup. And that's why it means so much in terms of, you know, because if the Dolphins go and they lose 27-26, it's a great game back and forth. Then you kind of think, okay, road game, we didn't have Teron, it's a really good defense. We, you know, if we go and we get spanked, that puts a little bit of perspective on exactly where we are. And you look back and you think, well, actually, we've beaten the Lions, the Browns, the Texans, the Steelers. You know, what exactly are we? Do you know what I mean? This is a sort of we've had those kind of games early in the season where, you know, you beat the Patriots. Patriots are a pretty good side. Went on the road and beat the Ravens. Yep, that was a kind of okay. We kind of line in the sand, you know where we are. Then we beat the Bills. Okay, cool. But now, like, have we trained on? Clearly the offense has trained on. Clearly the defense is playing much better. But now this is a kind of a, you know, this is another line in the sand game in terms of, okay, where are we as a team? What, you know, because this is a team that we could absolutely play in the Super Bowl should we get there. 100% the 49ers. Just don't look at their record. Look at their talent. And they, you know, this is a uber talented team coming in that we're coming into play.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I saw from this game against the Texans, and it's been going on for 3 weeks now, ever since Bradley Chubb arrived, they are reworking this defense, and so far so good. I understand that the competition hasn't been that great, but they did go up against Laremy Tunsil, and they had Laremy Tunsil, you know, he was spinning, he was dancing out there. He was having a hard time with those guys. Melvin Ingram, Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, like, this thing as designed is working. And Simon, I understand that they want him back for next season, and his agent is like, slow down. You know, we'll talk money at the end of the season, but they got to bring back Melvin Ingram. That guy has he's back. He's the same guy that he was 4 years ago. Like, he can't be blocked.
Yeah, he's a really good player. Look, and the Bradley Chubb trade has already paid off massively. The Dolphins are getting home consistently, or causing consistent pocket collapse with four. And that's, you know, that's huge. That's how you win in January and, you know, February in the NFL. You know, you can't, it's not sustainable, the cover zero blitzes the whole time, because as was proven early in the season by the Ravens, who completely outfoxed the Dolphins when they brought late motion with the tight end, which just confused everybody, and they were able to get the ball down the field, and they were able to max protect and get the ball out. We weren't able to handle that change. So just to be able to get home with four, which we're consistently doing, whether that's Gink, we brought a couple of great blitzes. I thought Elijah Campbell had a great blitz, or a couple, Jerome Baker had a great blitz.
Yeah, they lined up Baker standing up in Jalen Phillips' role, and he got there.
They also lined Phillips up as a sort of, remember the old Tiger formation that Jason Taylor used to run? They lined Phillips up there once, they lined Ingram up there once, and they lined Chubb up there once, almost like as a middle linebacker just blitzing on third down, which I thought was very interesting. But they were just able to cause, they were absolute agents of chaos. And that's what you need with four-man rush, is to just be. Now, the flip side to that is, you know, you play a Josh Allen, not with Jimmy, because Jimmy Garoppolo is different. Herbert a little bit, Allen, you know, you end up playing a Jalen Hurts. You end up playing not with Mac Jones, not really with Aaron Rodgers, a little bit with Jordan Love if we play him on Christmas Day, not really Mac Jones, and then not really Mike White in the final game of the season. But obviously in the playoffs, then Pat Mahomes, we know Tannehill can do it. You know, there are quarterbacks that can break, contain, and get out.
Lamar.
Yeah, Lamar, obviously, you have to be disciplined with your pass rush. And it's something that Josh Boyer goes back to his New England days in terms of, you know, rush points, in terms of drop points, all of those things, staying lane disciplined to make sure that you're not just leaving massive pockets. But the great thing about the cover zero then means is that it means that when you rush with four, you know, you're able to drop linebackers back to play specific roles as linebackers. Do you know what I mean? It allows them to do that. They're not rushing and they're not leaving massive swathes of the field open, you know, where you can just kill the Dolphins, you know, in the intermediate area.
Do you want to hear a weird stat before I ask you about another player?
Love to.
Tom Brady has made it to the final 2 minutes of a game in overtime or in regulation with a 7-point lead. He was 218-0 going into yesterday.
Wow.
He lost. He is now 218-1. And that one loss is forever a trivia question. The answer to the trivia question is, who was the quarterback? Jacoby Brissett.
That's an amazing stat. I mean, that just underlines.
Is that amazing or what? Now, on the way out here, I got to ask you about a player. Very under the radar. And you know, we pride ourselves on, you know, maybe we should have done an emergency podcast about this. But the Dolphins very quietly poached Justin Zimmer off of the Bills practice squad. And then played him 13 snaps out of nowhere on Sunday. So the guy got here on Friday, and he's in a uniform running around for 13 snaps on Sunday. What do you make of him? I look at him, and he's like a one-dimensional zero type, a three-tech type, I guess. I don't know much about him.
I thought he was excellent. I actually had to look up that. I was like, who is that? but you kind of go back and look at a guy that's been around the league. I think was it Ferris State he came out of?
Yes.
I think he played for the Falcons and the Browns and the Bills. And, you know, I just thought he played. I just thought he was all over the shop at times. Like, there was a play early in the second quarter that there was a penalty on, but he made a huge play. And I just kept looking like, who the hell is this guy? But yeah, I just think just another smart signing. It replaces the guy that we all like, whose name completely escapes me. But just a smart move from Chris Greer just to bring him in. He seemed to, you know, slotted in perfectly. It was like he played all his career in, you know, it wasn't like he'd just been signed last week in terms of, you know, his ability. And he was out there making plays. And what is it? I'm just looking at his size. So, yeah, I mean, he's only 292 pounds. So he's not massive. He's not like this massive internal kind of.
Yeah, you know, he's like a college three tech. Like, yeah. there's hundreds of them that you see out there.
Not overly athletic, but, you know, just a guy he's tough to move. He can move a little bit left and right. He can, you know, just be an oak in the middle, just soak it up. He's got good hands. And I thought he made a good contribution yesterday. I thought it was, you know, also, I think at Ferris State, because I remember looking in the draft, he used to be able to rush outside as well. You know, I don't think you're going to see him do that. But, you know, if you're looking at a stout situation, running situation, potentially early down running, you could easily move him outside and play three linemen. Do you know what I mean? In terms of if you're going to play a 3-4. So, yeah, I just think he was raw coming out. But just as a guy that you can just sit in as a rotation, you know, he's not going to let you down. He can, yeah, you know, just soak up that interior run game. I think it's a good signing by the Dolphins. Another good signing by the Dolphins.
Yeah, and to top this off, he has two career sacks. One of them is against Kyler Murray, which is odd watching him run around and actually get Kyler Murray. And the other one is against Jacoby Brissett and the Miami Dolphins last year. He actually had a sack against the Dolphins in that game. In that game, he actually had three tackles, a tackle for a loss, a quarterback hit on Tua to start the game, actually, and a sack on Jacoby Brissett. So I guess that's where we got it from. We had We had film on his game against us last year, and we said, you know what? Let's kick the tires. He looked good against us. You know, maybe he'll look good against somebody else. And he looked all right.
Yeah.
All right. On the way out, I guess we could do our three stars of the game. You know, it's hard to find a star in a game where it was 30-0 at halftime, and now they're benching everybody, or they're benching at least their starting quarterback. So I'll go first, and then I guess you could follow up to close out the first half of the show. I'm going to say, you know, who were the three stars? I think Jalen Waddle shined. He did have a drop, but he was consistently open. And had he been led a little bit better on one of those throws, and it happened again, it's so difficult to get it over the linebacker's head and in front of the safeties. As you saw last night with Aaron Rodgers, like, he actually threw a pick by trying to be too perfect with the ball.
Yeah.
I thought he was fabulous. Other than him, you know, Alec Engel is always consistent. And my third guy is, I guess, it was hard to find another one, but I'm going to give it to Xavier Howard. He is back to being who he was. And if there was ever a play where you saw him and you said, okay, he's back, is when he has that one-handed catch at the back of the end zone that, of course, it wasn't going to count because it was out of bounds. And then he catches it one-handed, and then he puts it between his legs and does like a little basketball move in front of Brandon Cooks. Of course, he got the touchdown, and he's always Johnny on the spot with those. So those are my three. Your three, Simon.
I'm going to go Bradley Chubb. I thought he was outstanding, just consistent pressure off the edge, the sack strip. He's just such an absolute force. Verone McKinley, I thought it was a really good. They lined him up center field quite a lot. He just played, you know, deep center field, and just his ability just to roam across and make that interception. I thought it was what he did. It, you know, he's just a ball magnet. Was a ball magnet at Oregon. He did the same there. And I thought Eric Rowe. I thought Rowe's just a really good, solid, no nonsense meat and potato player. He's just, every team needs a bit of glue like Eric Rowe. It was a big hit that forced the fumble for X to return that for a touchdown. And, you know, he was benched a few weeks ago, didn't even suit up, didn't really know why. And he's come back. He's never pissed and moaned. He's never complained. He's a real team first guy. He's a great person, great personality. I know players in the locker room absolutely love him. He's seen as a bit of a leader to that entire unit. So, yeah, I think Eric Rowe. And I'd also just like to throw in that I thought on special teams, Clayton Fedulin made a load of special teams tackles, or he funneled special teams play, like return guys back inside. Just his positioning, his tackling on special teams, I thought was excellent. So, but if I was going to pick three guys, it would be McKinley, Rowe, and the excellent Bradley Chubb.
All right. And that's it. And when we come back from break, we'll have Chris Kaufman. But first, these words. This show is brought to you by Liquid Death. What a great logo, right? Looks like a tall boy beer can. Liquid Death is actually mountain spring water from the Alps, available in still, sparkling, and these flavors. Severed lime, mango chainsaw, and my favorite, Buried Alive. I actually bought another 12 yesterday. Buried Alive is my favorite and my new go-to day drink. It's no longer a secret. This is the most underrated thirst quencher in the market. Buy it today. Liquid Death kills your thirst, and the infinitely recyclable cans are environmentally friendly. Liquid Death also donates 10% of the profits from every can sold to help kill plastic pollution. Go get Liquid Death at your local Publix, the Fresh Market, or Whole Foods Market, or find a Liquid Death retailer near you with their store locator tool at liquiddeath.com/3. That's our dedicated website, by the way. THREE, liquiddeath.com/3. Follow Liquid Death on social media, on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and Twitter. Use the hashtag #MurderYourThirst and #DeathToPlastic. Liquid Death.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. And as promised, Chris Kaufman. Hello, Chris.
Hey.
Yeah. Now, we're going to kick off this. We're going to kick off this.
You just get a high.
That's all I get is a high?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Well, wait till I unleash a question on you that Simon seemed to have a lot on. Okay. You'll never guess it if I told you in a million years. But we're going to talk about the same guy in this second half part of the show because I'm kind of fascinated by it. First of all, let's give a shout out to a member on OnlyFans. He owns backroomcollection.net. You could go to backroomcollection.net and they have these beautiful prints, beautiful sports prints. If you use the promo code 3YPC, you get 10% off your entire order.
Wow.
And guess what? We're giving one away right now on OnlyFans. So you're talking about, these are items that are over $100. It's $3 a month. And you would think, okay, yeah, but you know, what, they do a giveaway every month? No, we do a giveaway after every win. And if you haven't noticed, the Dolphins do a lot of that. So we're talking about a lot of giveaways every single week. Well, now we're giving away things that are worth over $100 a week. Yeah. Become a member of OnlyFans now. Okay, run. All right. Chris, we're going to start in a weird place, okay? Because I don't think you're going to have too much on this.
A weird place.
Yeah, we're going to start in a very weird place.
Okay? If this has to do with World Cup, man,
it has nothing to do with World Cup. Actually, we talk no World Cup whatsoever with Simon. I know it's a sore spot that his, you know, his Lions, you know, his English three Lions, you know, they drew with the U.S. I know it's a sore spot with him, but. You know,
yeah, I did see that much.
Okay, I wasn't gonna bring that up. You know, why bother you? Why? What's? How does the term go? Why pluck the legs off a spider? Right?
I've never heard that term before.
I actually have. Or pluck the wings off a fly. You know what I mean?
Either one just sounds sadistic. But yeah,
yeah. Like, why do that? Like, it's not necessary. But we're gonna start in a weird place. I asked Simon about this, and he actually had some stuff on this. Okay, which is interesting. I pride our podcast on being like kind of first on everything. Not that we're first on news or, you know, first on a take or anything like that, but we're kind of first on like an under the radar signing. It's a miracle we didn't have an emergency podcast on this. But the Dolphins under the radar, under our noses, without us even knowing, okay, pluck Justin Zimmer off of the Lions practice squad. No, the Bills practice squad. And played him 13 snaps on Sunday. Simon says he was really good.
Oh, I saw.
Your thoughts?
I saw him. I mean, I saw him play like during the game. And I was like, wait, when did that happen?
Friday.
When did we get him?
Friday. That's what's shocking. Like this is supposed to be a pretty tight-knit unit, right? We're talking about Zach Sealer, Christian Wilkins, John Jenkins, Raekwon Davis.
You know
the ends. Like, this is a tight unit. They went out and got a guy off of the Bills practice squad, mind you, on Friday, played on 13 snaps on Sunday. What did you say?
He looked really good. Actually, you know what? He reminded me of, at first I was trying to rack my brain a little bit because I saw him and I knew his name, Justin Zimmer, and I started to get him confused with on the preseason the Dolphins had a nose tackle that was I forget his name exactly. It was it was this year, not 2021, but let's see if I can find it here. I was remembering Niles Scott from earlier in the preseason, and I was getting him confused a little bit. And then I was like, I was looking at it, I was like, no, wait, no, Niles Scott. That's a different guy. This is Justin Zimmer. This is the guy from Ferris State. I mean, he was an athlete when he came out. The dude is like a really physically impressive guy.
And interestingly enough, I talked to Simon about, we spoke about this. They obviously had the film from his game against the Dolphins last year where he absolutely destroyed the Dolphins. If you go look it up, like, that game is ridiculous. He has three tackles, a sack, a tackle for a loss, three quarterback hits. It's insane what he did.
Wow. I don't remember that. I don't remember him doing that against us last year, but I do remember him as a prospect because he's been in the league for a while. And, you know,
and he's
30.
He's no pluck and stash guy. You know, that's Ben Stilley. Ben Stilley's the pluck and stash guy. This is a we want you to play some snaps here.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He definitely, they needed him for some immediate snaps. And you know what? Frankly, he did really well. I mean, I was looking at him. I was noticing, and I was, if I remembered right, you know, he was extremely well known. He was extremely strong coming out of Ferris State. Like, he was known for his strength. You know, so and which again had me a little bit confused, or had me a little bit confusing him with Niall Scott, because Niall Scott was a very, very strong nose tackle type as well. But then I was like, no, this is the guy that's old, or this is the guy that's from, like, you know, years ago. I think I probably saw him in an All-Star game. He played well. He played about what I would have expected. Say the Dolphins had brought up Ben Stilley in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Justin Zimmer played pretty much exactly the kind of ball that I would have expected out of Ben Stilley, which kind of just goes to show you that, you know, this is a specialized defense, and you can get guys, you know, the certain positions on this defense, they need to be good at some things, and it doesn't really matter what they are in other things, and that's not true of all defenses. So sometimes you're able to just pick up, you know, unsung guys that are good at the thing that you need them to do and not good at the things that you don't really need them to do. And so they don't have, you know, much fanfare or much, you know, they're not regarded well necessarily in the league, but they do the things that you want them to do in this defense, and he did it. I mean, he was great. You know, did Simon go over his athletic measurements? Because, man,
he said he's a good athlete, that he remembers.
Yeah, well, did you know that at six, you know, he's almost 6'3", and he's over 300 pounds, right? He was over 300 pounds coming out in Ferris State, but he ran a 4.91.
That's nice.
7.09 cone drill.
Nice.
7.09. That's wide receiver level. That's wide receiver. He's a 300 pound. And he did 44 bench reps.
Jesus. Yes. Yeah. So John Jenkins, you think John Jenkins is looking over his shoulder saying maybe they're getting a smaller zero type here into, although I think he fits more as a defensive end, no? In our system?
Well, you know, that I don't think he's exactly the same as John Jenkins. Like, I think that, you know, Jenkins played plenty in the game. And I think that he's not exactly a John Jenkins. I would have compared him more with Ben Stilley. Or, you know, Niall Scott was a bit more of a replacement with John Jenkins, even though he's smaller. But that's the point with, you know, with Zimmer as well. Like, he may be strong, but he's a lot smaller than John Jenkins. John Jenkins, what is he running, like 340 or something like that? I mean, he's,
yeah, you
know, no matter what he's putting up on the bar, that's a lot of heft.
John Jenkins. And John Jenkins is, he's kind of irreplaceable for now. You know, he's like a real locker room leader. Like, he's a captain without the C on his chest. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Everybody likes him. Like, they need that guy around. Like,
well, I mean, and he and Raekwon, you know, he and Raekwon Davis make a good team for that spot. I don't think Justin Zimmer is exactly like that, but, you know, it's just another one of these, you know, Zach Sealer kind of wannabe guys, where I think Zach Sealer is, you know, bordering on Pro Bowl level play. You know, the guys like Ben Stilley and Justin Zimmer aren't there. In Stilley's case, he might be there eventually because he's still young. But in Zimmer's case, you know, he's not there. But, he does the things that you need in this defense. I mean, and he's a tremendous athlete. He's tremendously strong too. So
yeah, it was an interesting signing. It was a really interesting signing. By the way, Ben Stilley played 28 snaps not on Thanksgiving against the Buffalo Bills. At Buffalo, it was at Detroit. He played 28 snaps, didn't register anything. But this past week, got an assist and a tackle. No tackles for loss. One tackle, one quarterback hit on Tom Brady. That was Ben Stilley. He played 11 snaps this past week. So he's well on his way to the Hall of Fame already.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this guy's going to be in camp.
Yeah. All right. Now, I'll start with you where I started with Simon. Forget about Twitter, okay? Like, you can't go on Twitter during games. I gave up on that last year, okay? Like, that's not something you do. You just can't do that, okay? Because people were freaking out, it turns out, when it was 30 to nothing, okay? But I was telling Simon, like, look, you can't expect your team to come out flat when the disposition at halftime is Mike McDaniel setting up when he's going to take Tua Tagovailoa out and when he's going to take certain other starters out at halftime. And the score's 30 to nothing. The team obviously checked out. In my opinion, you could say it's kind of disrespectful to your opponent. I think it's disrespectful to the team. I don't think it was Mike McDaniel's best moment. Simon agreed with me. I think he put way too much pressure on the defense. And, you know, it's water under the bridge. It was an absolute blowout. They kicked the crap out of the Texans. But I think that the second half was completely mismanaged. And, you know, I hope that they don't do that again. If they do that again, obviously it's a good thing because they're up, you know, by a million points against somebody. But
let me get this right. Your bone to pick is that in the second half, what was it? It was with, I mean, they because they had two drives in the second half with Tua at quarterback, but in the second half, starting around 3 minutes left in the third quarter, they went to Skylar Thompson. Is that your bone to pick, that they let off the gas that much by going with Skylar Thompson? Is that, you know, emblematic of what you're talking about?
No, my bone to pick is that at halftime they discussed how long Tua was going to be in there and how many starters they were going to keep in there with him at halftime. And Tua revealed that they settled finally on two series. You know, if that's what you're talking about at halftime, it stands to reason that your team's going to look around saying, oh, okay, this thing's over. You're going to let down.
I don't agree that really had an impact on anybody's mentality or anything like that. I don't think that was what was going on, to be honest. And I think that what was going on was, you know, there were some adjustments made by the Houston Texans on both sides of the ball. And, you know, you can't necessarily keep a team down for 60 minutes. Defensively, it's hard to keep a team down for 60 minutes. But I think defensively, you would look more at scheme than what sort of things they were calling against the Houston Texans that ended up contributing to the Houston Texans actually getting the ball rolling a little bit offensively. And as for Miami offensively, I have absolutely no problem with discussing beforehand, like, what does this look like? You're up 30 to nothing against the worst team in the league at halftime. And, you know, yeah, and Tua had, correct me if I'm mistaken, Tua had already been folded over like an accordion at the end of the first half, right?
Yes.
And you had Brandon Schell already in for Teron Armstead toward the end of the second quarter. It was entirely appropriate to be having that sort of discussion so that you're not making decisions just on the fly, like, so that you kind of have an idea of what this is going to look like in the second half. And I think they took him out at about the right time. Now, offensively, what was happening was the same thing that was happening toward the end of the second quarter when Teron Armstead had already left, which is to say Brandon Schell was struggling at left tackle. And it was, I'm not saying he was the only guy, because that was not, that's not true by any means. But it's his struggles added on top of the tough game that guys like Robert Jones and Austin Jackson were already having. That was not providing Tua in the second, in the second quarter, as well as the beginning of the third quarter. It wasn't providing him enough of a an out, basically. Enough space, because we've seen Tua, you know, we saw it on the touchdown pass he threw to Durham Smythe. You know, he can make somebody miss and scramble up. He can step up, he can step up in the pocket. He can do things, but you can't, you can do that if you have one guy. You can't do that if you have two or three. And that's what you notice on a lot of these plays. And this is the point that I keep making about his 2020 and 2021 seasons, and why the offensive line struggles in those seasons were so, you know, key in his, you know, quote unquote struggling. He actually played pretty good football, in my opinion, in those years, considering what he had going against him. But this is what has happened. You can't have multiple guys in on you every play, because he's trying to dodge the guy that Robert Jones is letting in, but he can't, because the left tackle is also doing a poor job. And so where is he going to run? You know, and so I think that's what happened in the second quarter, and the fact that it was still going on in the third quarter is not surprising. And I'm not going to blame it on, you know, the head coach or somebody like talking to Tua and being like, you know, yeah, I think maybe we're probably going to do you about like two series in this next half before we start taking some people off the field. Like, I'm not going to blame that. That was the same thing that was already had happened before any of that discussion was going on. So, you know, no, I wouldn't take issue with any of that. I take issue with Brandon Shell playing left tackle poorly. You know, I take issue with Robert Jones having a really tough day in pass protection at left guard. And I take issue with Austin Jackson being Austin Jackson.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that didn't work out. And now Austin Jackson has that ankle injury. I think use it as an excuse to bust him down as the swing tackle, and then, you know, play Shell at right tackle, play Little at left tackle, and call it a day. Wait for Teron Armstead to come back in 1, 2, 3 weeks, you know, and just plug him in at left tackle. Don't change all of this around.
But you also have to blame, and to your point about the game management, you also blame Mike McDaniel, because I mean, if you look at what was happening in the game, right? Pass protecting 51 times against the worst team in football, it seemed, you know, with an injury prone, we could argue back and forth about whether he's actually injury prone. I think most would agree he is. With an injury prone quarterback, is dumb.
I'll tell you what's even more dumb, and part of the reason I think Jerry Hughes was so pissed off is cutting Jerry Hughes and Collins for an entire half, and then rolling out the second half and essentially doing the same thing again. Like, you know, you're gonna piss those guys off. They're gonna come after your quarterback, and they're gonna hit your quarterback.
But you know what happens when you give guys 50 reps against, you know, when you give the defensive line players, the pass rushers, 50 reps of just pass against an offensive line unit that, frankly, I mean, yeah, we have Connor Williams is good on there, and Robert Hunt is kind of up and down, mostly good, but, you know, he has his down days. And then even Teron Armstead, obviously he's unimpeachable when he's playing, but he didn't even play all the way through the half. But you give so many reps to those pass rushers, they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
That's what they do. You know, you give them so many looks, they're going to figure it out, and they're going to get better and better at rushing the passer. That's what they do. They set guys up. And they also start to key in on tendencies, and they start to, get better ideas about how to rush the passer. You give them that many looks at the quarterback, I mean, they're just going to get better and better. And that's what happened. And it's, in large part because how many passes did we throw in the first half?
It was
like
32.
Yeah, it was like 32. you gave them a full game's worth of reps to figure it out in just one half. Against a crappy team. And so I think that was the mismanagement. I think that was the, even though the run was not effective, that was the mismanagement was just giving them so many looks that they were just going to get better and better at rushing the passer and putting Tua in jeopardy, really. And we're lucky that when he got folded over the way that he did, that it wasn't more serious than it was.
Yeah, and I completely agree. One thing I would say is this: they showed a little bit of that diversity in the run game by giving Tyreek Hill an end around. They have so many guys capable of doing so many different things in the run game to augment the. Okay, you don't have Mostert, you have Jeff Wilson, and you have Gaskin out there. You have all these wide receivers you could have used as well, and diversify your running game a little bit. Keep it on the perimeter. Like, I understand you don't have the tackle on the left side that you trust to get out on outside zone, but get into 21 personnel, use something different. You use Tyreek Hill once, he get you got well, you 8 yards.
You know what it is.
You think he's actually keeping all of this in the back burner for to unleash it on some of these people coming up here?
100% I do. Yeah. I think yeah. He was not. This is his job in San Francisco was to engineer, a masterclass run game. That was his job. And when you see him go more vanilla on the run game against, the worst team in the league, and he's got road trips against both three road trips in a row against the San Francisco 49ers, LA Chargers, and Buffalo Bills coming up after this game. That is what it is. That is what it is. He was keeping things in his back pocket because he doesn't want to put down tape for those teams who are going to be playing at home. And the run game is going to be very important in those away games. And so, I think, yeah, absolutely. They did a lot of stuff on the passing game that they've been doing all year. In the run game, I think that, yeah, there was a lot that he wasn't really putting on tape there. Because I think it's going to be so that's how important it's going to be in their mind when they're traveling out west.
All right. And what would you do with the offensive line? You agree? Shell back at right tackle, Little at left tackle?
I realize that Austin Jackson had a bad performance. I wouldn't hang my hat on that at all as a pass protector. But I will say this, that, I don't know. His first game back after, the last time he had played was week one,
Yeah,
and this was a guy who in the preseason, his first game in this preseason, I think some people were kind of singing his praises a little bit. But, when I dissected the tape, it was like, no, this wasn't good. And then the second preseason game, I looked at it and it was like, maybe not great, but it was definitely better. It was definitely better the next game that he played. And then he played all three preseason games. And then he played a little bit, definitely a little bit better against Philadelphia in the third preseason game. I remember that. And then the snaps that he played against New England were probably the best that I've seen him before he got hurt. And so do you take, knowing that he showed that pattern and that he's playing a new position at right tackle, and now he just had this 2 month layoff where he wasn't playing at all, are you really going to take that guy, just shut the door on him because it didn't look so good at times during this game against the Texans, which had some, I would say, some mismanagement in terms of the run pass calling? are you really going to hold out against him to the point where you're just closing the book on him already? Like, it's over. It's over now. I don't think that's the case. I think they invested too much in him. So I do think he's going to play this next game at right tackle. I think he's the starter. The question is, what do you do at left tackle? Because I don't think Brandon Shell plays well at left tackle.
No.
Period. And, you know, so are they really going to just keep at it and say, you know, this is our guy. This is the backup. So here he is, you know, let's go. I mean, he played left tackle against the Jets and he sucked then. He played left tackle against the Texans and he sucked then as well. He was far better at right tackle. And career-wise, I think he's always been a right tackle. So I think you have to go with Greg Little. Greg Little played in the game. He's healthy enough to play. I think you have to go with Greg Little at left tackle, and I think they're going to continue the experiment with Austin Jackson at right tackle. The thing you don't want to do is after this guy, Austin Jackson's had such a challenged career so far, and it's been hard to get to teach him and to get him better and better. The thing you don't want to do is suddenly, okay, forget that whole experiment of right tackle thing. Now you're our left tackle until Teron Armstead comes back. You know, I don't think that's the thing you do. But at left tackle, you are going to have to play whichever of the two, Brandon Shell or Greg Little, looks the best in practice. And I imagine that's going to be Greg Little, actually. But we'll see what the coaches think.
Yeah, Greg Little played did he play left tackle this season for the Dolphins or no?
He did at one point. And I thought that he was better at left tackle than he was at right tackle. He played some left tackle against Cleveland. I don't know if you remember that. Mm-hmm. Now he played a pretty awful game at left tackle against Minnesota. But I think in the preseason he played a lot of left tackle for the Dolphins, and I thought he looked good in that preseason, you know, against Philadelphia. At left tackle, I thought he looked better at left tackle than he has generally at right tackle.
Yeah, and don't forget in the during the Tampa Bay joint practice and the Eagles joint practice, Teron Armstead has like this favored nation status where,
yeah,
you know, he shows up and he's like, I'm not practicing today.
Yeah, he shows up, puts the helmet on, maybe rides the exercise bike.
No, he doesn't even ride the exercise bike. He stands next to Applebaum and like he's like a second coach. You know what I mean? Wearing a visor. All right. Greg Little was the left tackle. Like, you know, Greg Little was the left tackle all throughout all of that. Mm-hmm. So he was going against ones the whole time.
So, yeah, and I think he was a decent left tackle when healthy. I wonder how healthy he is. Clearly by the time he played against Minnesota in week 6, he was not healthy. He was not looking good. But he had a month worth of just not playing, and then he started appearing in the Cleveland game, and now again, and I guess it was only one snap in the Houston game, but it was enough to be out there the last two games. So I think he might be healthy, and honestly, I think that's our guy. I think that's the guy at left tackle.
Yeah, I tend to agree. You got anything on Kendall Lamb? They signed him today. He's going on the practice squad.
No, nothing at all. I mean, I've heard the name, but I can't even remember who he's.
Yeah, they poached him. They poached him off of the Lions practice squad. So,
yeah. I mean, I don't know what to expect from that, from him at all. I mean, I can tell you athletically what he is, but that's. I mean, athletically, I don't think he's anything to, you know, write home about either. So, yeah.
All right, so to close this out, we already did our – in the first half, we did our three stars of the game, so I guess you could give us yours.
You know, this one's a hard one. I'm going to be honest. You know, I thought I want to give it to Xavien Howard because not only did he have the touchdown, I just thought that coming off the bye week and coming off the rest, you know, he looked pretty good. And he's had a really challenged year. He really has. I mean, if you look at it, And I thought that he looked probably the best, maybe the best game that he's had all year, even taking the touchdown aside, So, definitely Xavier Howard would be one of them. I thought that Tua did not have his best game as a quarterback, but at the same time, it was like, who was playing better than him on the offensive side of the ball? You can make a case for Tyreek Hill, of course, because he's always playing that well, but it's either Tua or Tyreek Hill. I guess, River Craycraft did so much more in this game than he has in any of the previous games. So I guess we'll give it to him. And then I'll give the last game ball to Teron Armstead for only straining his pec instead of tearing it, which is what we thought had happened. And yeah, we thought he was gone for the rest of the year. So his most valuable play of the day was only getting strained instead of tearing.
Yeah. And I also love our coach today and his availability. He spoke about Teron Armstead and he said what everybody else knows. He says, I wouldn't put it past him to be ready sooner rather than later, because there's been this 2 to 3 week timetable that's been put out there that the team is not abiding by. But you could do the numbers on this.
Well, it's hard to count them out, right?
Right.
That's what he's saying, and that's what he said about Keon Crossan, and I think he knows the same thing about Teron Armstead. It's hard to count them out. What I would say is there's a fair chance that he's playing against the Chargers.
Yeah.
This is based on what I know and what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's what I've heard as well. And as far as treatment for this, this is a professional football team. They're going to exhaust everything. They're not like you and me, getting hurt, playing uh-huh. flag football at the park. You know what I'm saying? Like, these people are going to spend money. They're going to look for the best treatment possible for their $18 million a year investment. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. That's going to be it. The next time we talk to you, we're going to talk about a real big game. Okay. This is a big game. This is sexy. All right. It's been a while. I don't remember when. If you have one up the top of your head, you can refresh my memory. What was the last time that we talked about a Dolphin game being kind of sexy on the marquee? Like, this thing should have been on Sunday Night Football, by the way. We're getting the Colts and the Cowboys instead. Okay. You heard me. I'm not making that up. Okay. They were put to a decision and they decided, give us Colts Cowboys instead of Dolphins 49ers. But this is gonna be fun.
I don't know offhand of a game. Can't think of offhand a game that was sexier in the marquee way that you're talking about. But that's only because I have like zero memory left. I'm just not remembering things.
Simon called it the first in a series of Super Bowl previews. So. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about it on Thursday. Oh, by the way, on the way out, Jordan Love. Not bad, huh?
Yeah, well, we'll see. I'd still rather face him.
Really?
I think you mentioned it. Would you rather face Aaron Rodgers on Christmas in that Christmas game? And I'm going to say right now, I'd rather face Jordan Love.
Really? Aaron Rodgers looks like he's falling apart physically. Like, there's going to be body parts missing by that game on the 25th.
If you look at who the Dolphins have played at quarterback this year, we have played against
right?
a struggling Mac Jones, Zach Wilson, Kenny Pickett, Justin Fields obviously went all out against us, but he's not. I would not say he's arrived yet completely.
He's almost arrived.
Yeah,
Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Kirk
Jacoby
Cousins,
Jacoby Brissett, and Kyle Allen. Okay, yes, we have played against Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and Kirk Cousins, and Joe Burrow.
And I don't like your tone with Jacoby Brissett. The guy's elite this year.
Okay.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Go look at his numbers. He's actually had a pretty good season. He's been pretty good.
I've seen his numbers, and I don't agree with you on that. But anyway. So we have faced we have faced guys that aren't necessarily great, that aren't necessarily, let's take away the greatness aspect of it. Let's say guys that aren't really veteran experienced, you know. We haven't faced a lot of those guys. And when we have faced a lot of those guys that do have skins on the wall, and that are pretty good, like Jared Goff, Joe Burrow, and Kirk Cousins, it hasn't always looked so good, you know. Or let's throw Lamar Jackson in there, because he had a hell of a day against us, and should have won the game if not for the fact that Tua even had a better day. You know, the only one that we've really got is Josh Allen, who didn't have a great day against us for once in his entire career. Didn't have a great day against us. And I would rather face the inexperienced guy with this defense as opposed to the guy that is, you know, a veteran, really savvy, and has a lot of skins on the wall, a lot of experience. I would rather face Jordan Love than Aaron Rodgers. And I don't care how Aaron Rodgers is playing this year. I don't.
All right. Well, he's actually playing okay. He's just, you know, he has a broken thumb. Now he has an oblique injury. You know, he generally looks like death after these games, after he gets pounded on.
He needs another ayahuasca trip.
Easily. Obviously. You know, the next time that he goes and does ayahuasca in Peru, he needs to bring back a couple of wide receivers and a tight end. That's where he needs to start. Okay. Once he does that, all right. I already told Simon, like, I'm available. If the Packers want to give me the GM job, I'm available. And my first order of business is to get my Hall of Fame quarterback guys to throw to. Like, that's not such a bad idea.
Maybe he'll just hallucinate guys to throw to.
Well, I think he was doing that last night against the Eagles. All right. That's it. There is no more. On Thursday, we do talk about a sexy game. Big game. First one of the year, kind of. Because, you know, week 3 was a long time ago. This one's a kind of a Super Bowl preview. We'll talk about it on Thursday. See you then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.